Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Happy Top 100 Day.
Woo-hoo.
Baseball America Top 100 Prospects List is live at baseballamerica.com. It's a laborious process. We're waiting for the new baseballamerica.com. But in the meantime, J.J. has a lot of coding still to do and a lot of rollout to do at baseballamerica.com. So because of that, we're going to have a little bit of a tighter podcast. Jim Callis is on jury duty, and I failed to record a podcast with him. So Jim's on jury duty. You're getting a shorter podcast. So we're going to put ourselves on the clock. It's not exactly PTI, but JJ, we're going first 10 minutes. The first 10 minutes of this podcast is about our top 10. Let's focus on the top 10. And did you have any questions, JJ? Did you have a hard time filling out your top 10? I felt like between all the people who contributed to the Baseball America Top 100 here in the staff, that we had a pretty consensus top four.
The top four is easy.
I don't know if I'd say we had a consensus top 10, but it felt like it does feel to me that there's a pretty consensus top 10. I feel like I'm impressed with Zach Wheeler. I like Zach Wheeler, but I feel like our top 10 is a pretty, I feel like there's a decent sized line there in our top 10 in terms of ceiling.
I'd argue nine. Argue to me the top nine, I guess the way I put it is to me the top nine,
which is Profar, Bundy, Tavares, Myers, Fernandez, Miller, Cole, Bogart, Sano.
Those top nine to me were a pretty clear step as far as, okay, at the top nine it was pretty easy for me to go down those. When you get to 10 at Byron Buxton, as talented as Byron Buxton is, I could understand completely going a gazillion different ways at number 10 because you are talking about a guy who's yet to play full season ball. As athletically talented as he is, if you wanted to say, hey, to me, you know, Mike Zunino, who's number 17 on this list, or Javier Baez, who's number 16 on this list, you want to argue those 10 over Byron Buxton? I could see the argument.
I wouldn't argue. I don't see how you could argue Zunino over Buxton because Buxton was the top player on our draft list coming into the year, going into the draft, and he was clearly ahead of Zunino. And while Zunino did get to Double-A and played in the Fall League and all those kind of things, he's still the same guy, and Buxton's still that same guy. So I would say that there was the way we reflect the consensus in the industry,
right,
and that's what we're aiming to do,
right,
that Buxton would be inarguably ahead of Zunino.
Okay, I can give you that. I mean,
Baez is a different one because if you want to argue that Javier Baez is a higher offensive ceiling and he does it in the infield, I'll give
right.
you that one.
Okay, and that's what to me stands out. Like Miguel Sano's at nine, and even if you worry about the swing and miss and all, the power and just the tools are such, I don't think there's anyone in that 11 through 20 range that you be able to me easily argue over him.
Did we not have Baez ahead of Sano in the Midwest League? I thought maybe it was Sano one and then Baez, but I don't remember. That's what to me. I feel like you could make those arguments, but to me, Buxton was our top draft guy.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go on ceiling. I think he's a good cutoff there.
I like him at 10.
And
I'm just saying,
right? And that's to me. A couple other things stand out to me in these with the top 10. First off, there's some news with Jurickson Profar at number one. He's declined to play in the World Baseball Classic. I think you know where JJ and I stand on that one. And this goes to a column that I don't believe has been posted online
yet. No, it's not yet. We're going to roll it out
with some more
World Baseball coverage.
That's fine. We're recording this on a Tuesday. Tomorrow is when rosters have to be set, and Jurickson Profar just pulled out of the World Baseball Classic. The short version of this is, and I'm about to work blue, as old Kevin Goldstein would say, but I'm going to try to rein myself in. It's a joke that Jurickson Profar is not playing in the World Baseball Classic. Instead of auditioning for what looks like a part-time role with the Texas Rangers, this is where Commissioner Seelig would be like, hey, Texas Rangers, I'm trying to grow this freaking event. We're trying to make some money here. This is good for me. This is good for you because it will help Jurickson Profar develop by playing in the World Baseball Classic. It's good for everybody. And instead, he's going to go to spring training camp and try to be a part-time player with the Texas Rangers. Everything that's wrong about the World Baseball Classic is embodied in the fact that Jurickson Profar is not playing. I'll get off the soapbox, but that just kills me. And Oscar Tavares might play; he might play for Canada still. If only he threw right-handed, he'd play shortstop. Because did you see John Paul Morosi's story? That yes, Russell Martin is going to still try to play shortstop for Team Canada. Oh, Canada! But I mean, so JJ, did you have any – how did you debate number one with any amount of time in your own personal top 100?
Not really that much. I mean, obviously, you can make a case for Bundy. You can make a case for Tavares. But to me, when you talk about the age, the fact that he's not just a shortstop, he's not just playing the position. You know,
right.
The position. Jerickson Profar is a legit shortstop. I think you're even going to see, like, when you see what he is now, I think he could be a very solid big leaguer this year as essentially a 20-year-old.
Right.
And I think when you just go down the road and think, you know, you see the whippy bat speed. It's a whippy bat. There's power there. It's not because he's muscular. It's because
right.
he just has a beautiful swing. You see that. You're talking about really one of these rare, very rare creatures, which is a legit shortstop who could be an impact bat.
You just summed it up. A rare creature. That's Jerickson Profar. Dylan Bundy is a rare creature. Did you have any debate in your own mind, because I agree with everything you said about Profar, did you have any debate in your mind over Bundy as the top pitcher? And I think the bigger question seems to be, as a staff, who that number two pitcher
right.
is.
Yeah, to me, when it comes to the number one, it's Bundy. And the guys who are in that debate for number two, I'd have a real trouble arguing that they're better than Bundy. I just can't. I really can't argue it.
I'm with you on that. That's the way that I figured it out. I thought that Bundy was clearly the best pitcher. I think it's amazing. I can't remember. This is one thing that we'll have to research. I don't know why this is just striking me now. It would have been good to research this before we went to press. When's the last time we had guys this young at number one and two? Because usually the
last
guys
year.
At number one and two, really?
Trout and Harper.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Hello. Hello, John. That feels like it's a different trend. The guys I always think of at number one are guys who are like college draft guys who've been.
Right.
I mean, in very recent years, a lot of times like our one and two are like Dice K and Alex Gordon.
Well, the funny thing is this last year was younger because Harper
were younger.
Young, yeah.
And
Trout
slimmer,
was this age.
And slimmer, at least by Mike Trout. I can't get over how big Mike Trout looked. Mike, that picture of Mike Trout the other day was like Dana Carvey as Khan seeing Fat Sulu. I mean, it really was almost that jarring to see 240-pound Mike Trout. But I digress. But yeah, that's a great trend. I think that our number one and two prospects are 20-year-olds or teenagers like they were last
big
year.
Have played in the big
both,
leagues.
You're right. Both big leaguers as teenagers last year. How about the debate for number two pitchers? We're running low on time in this segment. Jose Fernandez, Shelby Miller, Garrett Cole, and I guess Wheeler and Skaggs at 11 and 12. Could you make the case for any of those guys as the number two guy?
Yeah.
I feel like Skaggs probably is not in that debate for me.
I think he's not because he's a little less power.
Right.
But any of the others, sure. If you want to make the case for Garrett Cole has the best stuff of any of these guys. Garrett Cole has better stuff than Dylan Bundy. If you want to talk about pure stuff. But, no, I to me, Jose Fernandez is the combination of feel for pitching and stuff and results because the season he had last year.
Right.
You put that all together. I mean, he and Garrett Cole were in the same league for a good bit of last year.
Yeah.
And most of the scouts who saw both of them said, yeah, I'll take Fernandez.
And I don't even think they were you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't even think that age was a factor because there are questions for some people. The scouts and the people I've talked to who saw him in high school in Florida who question his age and
right.
think that he's older than
but,
his listed age of 20.
But the thing, yeah, it was on stuff. It was on aptitude
right.
for pitching and all that. Now, I do want to ask you, we jumped over it, 3-4 Oscar Tavares, Will Myers. To me, that's where you get a very interesting debate, you know, as far as I think Profar had pulled himself a notch above because he's a shortstop
right.
as the number one position prospect in this year's class. Tavares, Myers, was that tough for you at all?
It really wasn't because I think you know what we did this year was we broke it down by the grades. We listed their grades, and the hit tool is the separator. And Tavares we have as a 75, and Myers is a 60. And I do think Will Myers has more power, but I think Oscar Tavares is more usable. I'm not putting down Will Myers in any way. I'm a Will Myers fan. Talk about whippy. This guy has whip. This is not a guy who does it with strength either. Same
mm-hmm.
thing with Oscar Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bigger version. And that if I were to choose, if I were to pick Will Myers in this debate, it would be because he's bigger and because I have more confidence in the bigger guy hitting for power and having that kind of impact. But Will Myers has been that kind of guy. I guess if you put them together, also they're Oscar Myers, which is I just thought of that one too. Not that it's funny. Will Myers to me has never put together the average and the power with the modest swing and miss. Mm-hmm. When he hit for more power in 2012, it was with more swing and miss and with a little bit less hitability. The previous year, he had a lost year. 2010, his first full year, it was hitting for average, less swing and miss, and the power was being projected for mm-hmm. him. So I like the fact that he's shown the ability to hit for average. I like the fact that he's shown the ability to hit for power. I'm waiting for him to be – I think he would have been number one on my list if he showed the ability to do both, hit for average the way he did in 2010 and hit for power the way he did in 2012, because I think his offensive ceiling is as high as anybody on this list. That means it's time to go on to the next topic, JJ. There goes 10 minutes. I didn't even plan that that well. JJ, some controversial guys. I think I wanted to go in this 11-30 group. So that we both have a couple of personal cheese balls in this list. And one of them for us is Christian Yelich.
We both are.
We both are bullish on Christian Yelich. And yet I think he ended up in the right spot. I think both you and I probably had him a little bit higher on our personal lists. But I think at 15 it seems about right.
No, it does seem about right. Because there are – you also have to look a little bit at what's going to happen with the guy. Christian Yelich, there is a question whether he's going to end up being a center fielder because of the Marlins situation. The Marlins – trade for Jake Mariznick. There's now going to be kind of a long-running competition to see which one's going to be center fielder, which one's going to be a corner. Christian Yelich can handle – I mean, he can hit well enough to handle a corner, no problem. At the same time, though, you put him in a corner, he's still a valuable – he's still a very valuable player, but he's not as valuable as he would be if he's also running down fly balls in center field. To me, 15 sounds about right. Like, you compare him to Javier Baez. I think Javier Baez, who is a shortstop, could be every bit – offensively equal of Christian Yelich. I think Christian Yelich is going to have a better hit tool.
Right.
I think Baez's power could be better.
I think Baez – I'm not trying, again, to minimize Yelich's impact because I think he will be an impact player. But I think Javier Baez has a chance to be an MVP. I'm not sure I think Christian Yelich has MVP.
Especially because last year he – you're coming – a year in, you're now saying with Javier Baez, you know, maybe he could be a shortstop. Whereas coming out of the draft, it was much more of, well, this guy's not a shortstop.
That said, Javier Baez, I'm looking in our top 20. Is there anybody other than maybe Miguel Sano who has more boom or bust than Javier Baez? I'm pretty confident Javier Baez is going to be a good big leaguer, but the energy and the effort that he plays with the game, the energy is a positive. The effort seems to be – I don't even know if I should say he plays with high effort, but he just plays the game so hard, and he also – Jim Stat, where he had like 10 hit by pitches in 57 games in the Midwest League, and that opposing teams were not afraid to, if he showed them up, which was apparently frequent, they were not afraid to retaliate.
Right.
That kind of thing will keep you off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing seems to keep guys from fulfilling their full potential. I mean, the comp with him is clearly Gary Sheffield. And, you know, Gary Sheffield should have been a Hall of Fame caliber player, and he's not. He did not have a Hall of Fame caliber career.
But
he had Hall of Fame tools, and he wasn't a Hall of Fame player.
You know what, though?
I'll take Gary Sheffield.
I was going to say, if you're Javier Baez, sign me up for that career.
Sure. Oh, no
15
doubt.
15 great years in the big leagues, you know.
Yeah, that said, he did leave you wanting more, didn't he? I mean, didn't you feel like Gary Sheffield should have been a third baseman for most of his career?
Sure, but at the same time, I guess I'm looking at it with the glass half full, which is he was one of the better hitters in baseball for –
He was.
For 15 years.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I wouldn't take the Gary Sheffield, but this seems like a guy who, and I phrased that wrong, but this is a guy who seems like, that's certainly a boom.
That's a boom.
But the bust could be, I don't know what the bust would be, like a lesser version of Ricky Weeks.
But the best way to put it is that we're not even actually, how you describe it, I'm actually arguing he's not a boom or bust guy. Because the bust you're arguing is that you come away wanting more. But
you're
all
right.
The guys that you
think, right.
Along the same lines, Justin Upton, when the year he was in the Midwest League, there was talk of, you know, I saw him not run out a lot of balls and all that.
I don't think that's the issue with Javier Baez.
No,
the issue seems to be that the makeup is, will he continue to try to be, will he do everything in his power to be the best player that he can be?
That was the argument of Justin Upton. The argument of Justin Upton is.
But that was an effort issue as opposed to, like, effort on the field. Javier Baez, it sounds like it's a makeup issue, like maturity and.
But my point being
– being a good teammate.
But my point being, in both those cases, what you end up saying is that you might end up being frustrated. It's like, man, this guy could be even better. But the guys we're thinking of in those cases, we're not saying guy didn't make it because of it. That guy wasn't a big league regular because of it. We're talking about, yeah, that guy we thought was going to be an MVP, and instead he's a solid big league regular.
You're right.
That's not a bust.
You're right.
To me, like, of the bust.
If he has a Gary Sheffield career, he probably should be in the top 10.
Of the bust on here in the top 20, and I love him, but the two guys to me is that Billy Hamilton, if Billy Hamilton's hit tool isn't, you know, that's where the question still is. It's like, okay, is he potentially going to get overpowered because he doesn't have enough power so that pitchers basically just rear back and, okay, high fastballs, is he ever going to hit him enough with enough authority to where he's still going to be a useful big league player,
right,
but he may not be the impact guy that his speed would seem to indicate. And the other one is, and, you know, kind of along the lines of Javier Baez, Trevor Bauer, who the questions are very much, they're makeup questions again, but the makeup questions are, is he going to make adjustments
right
to the big leagues, or is he going to not need to make adjustments because his stuff's so good that he doesn't have to? Or if not, is that going to be a problem?
And in terms of being a bad teammate, I mean, the question is, it's one thing to be a bad teammate when you're a teenager in the Midwest League. It's another thing to do it when you're in the major leagues.
It's a very
big difference.
There's not many guys out there who have really had their catcher from the year before when you're traded basically go out of their way to say, you know, look, here's all the problems I had with this guy.
And I have not also heard the Javier Baez, rap track to get back at all the Midwest League managers who ordered that their pitchers throw at him. Whereas we've heard the Trevor Bauer one.
And along the same line,
I look forward to Trevor sticking to pitching, which I think he does. I think he focuses on pitching.
Along those lines, if you said who in this top 30 has the two guys who have the most bust potential to me, and that doesn't mean I don't like them, but Archie Bradley at 25, he could, I mean, we have a risk factors thing that subscribers can read that's going along with this.
Absolutely.
The question with him is he going to throw enough strikes?
That track record, that was one of the best things. Matt Eddy, by the way, who stepped forward and has some really tremendous content in this issue and for subscribers online. You know, we wrote about walk rates, guys who had walk rates in excess of 5 per 9 innings. And, you know, the track record for pitchers like that, it's not great. It's really not that great. And the guys who we have, what, 3 of those guys in our top 100?
Mm-hmm.
In Archie Bradley, Aaron Sanchez, and Kyle Crick, all low-class A pitchers who walked more than 5 per 9 innings. They all had strikeout rates of 9.7 or higher. And Matt did find in the last 15, 20 years, some pitchers who had walk rates that high who had success. Some of the guys who did that are really surprising, like Paul Byrd.
I never expected
to see Paul Byrd in this, exactly. Or Matt Kinney, who I never thought of as a big-time power arm. But most of those guys did not have big-time success. Kerry Wood is the best example, and obviously there was a lot of arm trouble there.
Homer Bailey is now a no-hitter. He's putting it together, but it's been a long time.
It took him 3 or 4 years to really break through and have the kind of year that he had in 2012.
To me, the guy on that list that jumps out, like if you wanted the cautionary tale, is Pat Mahomes, who
yeah.
was a big-time prospect,
yep.
and it never clicked. He still had a useful big-league career, but it never clicked because his control never...
And the thing is, none of those guys had... The two guys who had the best success were the two guys who had the strikeout rate of 9.7 or higher, Bailey and Wood, which is why I like Bradley, Sanchez, and Crick ranked where they are. But if there is a guy in that top 30, the real boomer bust guy, really, you're right, is not Javier Baez. I would say it's Archie Bradley. The other guy in there, you know, and obviously, this is a good critique, actually, I saw of the podcast, I think it was on Baseball Think Factory, about how we overvalue prospects, and that's what we do. And I think we're always fighting our own urges to do that, but that's the world we inhabit, mm-hmm. the scouting and player development world. That's where we discuss. There are a lot of injury guys in this top 30, JJ. Number 30 is a big one. I would say numbers 23 and 24 are big ones. Travis d'Arnaud has missed parts of each of the last two seasons with injuries. It was a hand, it was a knee. Knee injury for a catcher, that's not good. That's not a good thing to have for anybody, but especially for a catcher. And Kyle Zimmer is less of one, but Kyle Zimmer did have postseason elbow surgery. I mean, I would rather that he didn't have postseason elbow surgery. That's
but
also
if we got a minute left and we're talking injuries, we got to mention Anthony Rendon, which
yes.
is like if you said who's also another boom bust guy in this. If Anthony Rendon's healthy and his legs have not calcified into something that, you know, does not allow him to bend his ankles, then you're talking about an elite bat, you know, who really has the potential.
I would take him over Mike Gold. All things being equal, if he was healthy, you'd take him over Mike Gold in a heartbeat.
Right, absolutely. And I'm probably, you know, the lightest on Anthony Rendon, and I'd agree with you on that.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about a guy who really at this point has been fully healthy for a full season once in the past 4 years, 5 years?
No, not five. I mean, 2010 was
he had a
last
serious
full
injury. Yeah, I was going to say, he had 1 year. I'm saying one good. He had 1 year basically free from injury.
His freshman year. And, oh, no, I wouldn't even say that. I don't even think his freshman year he was free from injury because he was coming off something in his high school senior year. I forget what that was.
Okay, so you have high school senior.
The fact is that his season that was laid out for him, he played every game. And then he did the same thing his sophomore year. Yeah, he got hurt in the summer. But his sophomore year, when his team, when Rice was asking him to go out there and carry us and be the best player in the country, he was, and he did all that. So we can go over a little bit for Anthony Rendon.
But that's all right. That's just a point, so we can move on to our step three, which is really, I think, step three is the rest of the list. I wanted to ask you, John, first off, cheeseballs. So give me two guys from this who jump out to you. It's like, you know what? I really like that guy.
Well, one who stands out is Oswaldo Arcia at 41. I think he is a profile right fielder. I don't think there's anything that Oswaldo Arcia – there's nothing that you want out of a right fielder that Oswaldo Arcia does not do, with the exception of speed. He doesn't have blazing speed. That said, in every other way, to me, he is a profile right field guy. I think he's going to be in the big leagues in 2013 in the second half. You know, we're going to, I think, have a podcast coming up soon where you and I talk a lot about the Minnesota Twins and their interesting offseason. To me, Oswaldo Arcia is part of how the Twins turn things around. They do have, in terms of their top 10 prospects, are as impactful as any team in the game. I like the offseason trades they made in terms of the prospects. I did not like the offseason moves they made at the major league level. But when they turn things around, when they're winning again in Minnesota, Oswaldo Arcia is going to be part of that. That's one of the first guys for me on the.
Okay, I'll give you one while you're figuring out another one. To me, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, number 51, Gregory Polanco. I just think if you're asking me describe, you know, like a Class A guy, what I want to see,
right?
Gregory Polanco pretty much is that. He did that last year. He can run. I think the hit tool's pretty advanced for his age. I know he made a big jump last year. That's the only concern you could possibly have. To me, is the legit concern is to see a guy who kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. Not that the Pirates didn't think this guy had some potential, but he never hit like that. Last year, he hit all year.
Right.
And then, you know, he's got a chance to be kind of that center fielder who covers a massive amount of range, runs well, hit, power. He's got it all, if he can just kind of keep – if he can keep developing, make half the jump he did from the year before to last year over the next 2 years, he's in really good shape.
He's a pretty exciting player. Both a lot of the Pirates' top-end guys are really exciting. I mean, Garrett Cole, Josh Bell, who didn't make the top 100, Alan Hansen. You just kind of wonder if it's for all the attention that the Pirates have paid and all the money they've paid out in scouting and player development, it just seems like the number of guys they're counting on is smaller than you'd hope it would be. When you compare their depth to other organizations like, say, the Rangers –
really, it's
to a lot of organizations. Well, I think that's the question with the Pirates. But we like star power, and they have potential star power.
They do.
So. One of their guys, I guess, I'd focus on, and I think he's just a fascinating guy because I don't think, even though he's advanced to AAA, I don't think we know really what he is. Is Nick Franklin? Did you read this article the other day that I forget which Seattle writer did this article? Or Nick Franklin's on a 6,000 calorie per day diet to try to increase and maintain his playing weight. That by August of last year, he was down to 162 pounds, ooh. And he's had a bout with mono. This is a guy who just I think there's anything definite about. Even at number 79 on our top 100, and this is not the first year he's been on our top 100. But let's just track this minor league career. First-round pick, back of the first-round pick, and it was panned. Not necessarily by us, but there were some outlets that really panned that pick of Nick Franklin and criticized it from the get-go, that it was a reach. I don't remember where we had him. I thought we had him in the top 50, maybe top 70 in our draft, top 100 that year. I don't think we thought he was a massive reach, but I think we thought we would say he was an overdraft. Mm-hmm. But he hit from the get-go. had a monster Midwest League season that was really kind of hard to put in context. Frankly, the last middle infielder we'd seen have a Midwest League season like he had was like Ian Kinsler, when he just tore that league up, hit 400, mm-hmm. and rocketed to the big leagues. I still ultimately see Nick Franklin as an Ian Kinsler type, an offensive middle infielder, and if he's a shortstop, he's an adequate defender, but you're always looking for more than adequate.
Right, I don't think, yeah.
But I don't think, but if he was playing last August at 162 pounds, JJ, how is he supposed to play shortstop when he's physically diminished? He just fascinates me because he's a switch hitter with power who's really unbalanced to one side. He's much better from the left side than the right side. There's so much unfinished with Nick Franklin, yet we have a pretty long track record of knowing that he could be an offensive middle infielder. I think there's still upside with him, and there's still so much to figure out with a guy who's reached AAA. He fascinates me. I'm on the pro-Nick Franklin side.
You bring up an interesting point there I did want to kind of point out to people, because I know when we get this list, we're going to have a chat. We're going to start, I think, at 2 p.m. today.
Yep.
But one of the questions we're going to get, I'll just take a guy, like, for example, Jake Odorizzi's 92 on this list. Jake Odorizzi's ranked higher before, and he had a good season last year. And so I know we're going to get a question, which is, why does Jake Odorizzi drop?
Right.
He had a really good year.
It's not a top 25 college poll. It's not like he had a good
weekend.
Right. He
had a good year. There would not seem to have been any new evidence that would make an argument that he should drop.
Right.
And the explanation is this. When a guy's in A ball, it's results, but you're also projecting. You're
right.
Also saying, okay, here's where he is now, and if he continues to improve these things, then he's this. As you move up the levels, one of the big reasons you drop is you have, that you get exposed to something.
Yeah, we just have so much more information on
Jake
Odorizzi now.
Right. Willie Peralta, may move down a little bit because he got a little exposed last year. It's like, okay, ceiling may not be exactly as much as had been hoped at one point because, he's having a little more trouble. Jake Odorizzi didn't really have that, but the argument, really what works with Odorizzi is you talk to people, you talk to scouts now, and there's a lot more scouts who before were like, this guy could end up being a 2-3. They talk about his – they make some Greinke comparisons and all.
The athleticism was really an asset for him at the lower levels that made scouts project that there was going to be more there with all his pitches.
Right, and the reality is that as he's climbed the ladder, there's not really more there. It's still good stuff. It's still solid, but you hear a lot more guys saying 4-5 because they go, you know what? The stuff is no better than what I saw.
He's just not taking that next step. I mean, I think we know more about him. I don't even know if he's been exposed as much.
I don't
as,
think because he's been successful.
Right. So I think it's just more a fact that there was projection that was built into those rankings in the past and that he has not fulfilled in terms of the quality. Really, let's face it, it's with the fastball. People mm-hmm. want to see more fastball. So now when you're comparing him to somebody, he's really more Alex Cobb than he is – I don't know, Zach Greinke, that's
right.
For sure. So if he's more Alex Cobb, he's more back of the rotation guy. JJ, let's talk about some of the guys before we run out of time. I think we're down to, 3 minutes here. There were a couple guys that we really debated at the back of this top 100. We're down to 3 minutes. One of them was Hak-Ju Lee. He wound up at number 90. The summary of Hak-Ju Lee, why he's in the top 100, and I would say that Jim Callis was his biggest defender, mm-hmm. is that this is a shortstop with speed. He can play the position defensively. And that the floor is pretty good for Hak-Ju Lee. At the very least, as an everyday shortstop, even if he doesn't give you a lot of offense, he's like an eight-hole hitter. I think that's the way Jim was arguing, that this is like an Alcides Escobar type. And Alcides Escobar even had a really better offensive season in 2012 than any of us would have projected. That's the thumbnail sketch, I think, of Jim's, which I think is defensible.
I would argue he's not as good as Alcides Escobar was. If you even rewound the clock.
Defensively,
or if you rewound the clock, I think there was even a little bit more hit tool.
I don't think so. I don't think you could say that for Alcides Escobar. He had never had an offensive season like Hak-Ju Lee had in 2011. I don't think he ever, not in the minor leagues. I think that's a little revisionist history on your part.
I was going to say, his 1 year he had 1 year, I think his second year in the FSL. I mean, again, it was an average-derived season, but so was Hak-Ju Lee's largely. Hak-Ju Lee does have a little more pop, I think. But I think...
Yeah, I don't think we're agreeing on that one. But the point is, I don't think you and I agreed that Hak-Ju Lee
I don't think
should
either
be
of
in the
us,
top 100.
The way to put it is yes, could he be a big league regular? Well, the Rays, how many – Reed Brignac would qualify as at some point he was a big league regular.
And yeah, but those guys had completely different minor league profiles. Completely different. Reed Brignac, first year in AAA, had 30 doubles and offensive player.
But what I'm saying is Reed Brignac ended up, at the big league level. I don't know what happened for him between AAA and the big leagues, but lost his bat got lost in the trip.
He became a 20 hitter. I mean, he was the worst hitter, one of the worst hitters in Major League Baseball in the last 2 years.
The point I'm making is that even with that, because he was a shortstop, he got plenty of at-bats.
He did get chances. The other players that we kind of debated, Leonis Martin was a late add to the top 100. That was really more – he and Hawk Julie are really more kind of floor than ceiling kind of players, to use that vernacular. I would say Delino DeShields and Roman Quinn at 99 and 100 were kind of shot the moon kind of guys. I think we also both felt – I know that you felt he's at number 95, but that Bruce Rondon could rank a lot higher. Then maybe he ended up ranking.
I like him about there, though, to be honest with you. I do think that he could be a big, one of the more impact guys in 2013 on this list.
I'll put it this way. I would take Bruce Rondon over Aroldis Vizcaíno. I know Aroldis Vizcaíno has much better breaking ball and this and that and the other, but he can't stay healthy,
he's
not going to pitch in 2012. I'm not trying to pick our list apart. I'm just saying this is what happens with a consensus list.
Daniel Corsino's 94 on it. I'd have Corsino higher. I think that guy, again, you talk about floor. I think his floor is a very solid reliever, but I think he's got a pretty good chance to be a starter.
I did like all of our we're under a minute on this part of it, and we have to get back to actually putting the list on the website and putting the podcast on the website and all that good stuff. Yeah, there we go. I probably need a new ringtone. I do love Bowie, but I probably need a new ringtone. But I'm trying to look, JJ, at our complete top 150s. Who was the guy that you had? Was there a guy on your list to wrap this up that you had pretty high on your top 100 who didn't even make it at all, that you were maybe a little bit bummed didn't make it?
I don't know about bummed. Alberto Mondesi, I didn't have in my 100 myself. I think that he'll be, barring a collapse, I think he'll be pretty prominent on this list next year. But that kind of leads me to me, that's the topic, the one last topic I want to talk about, which is getting a chance to talk about David Dahl. I love David Dahl. I think he's got a chance to be a very a stud prospect.
Oh yeah, I didn't give you your second cheese ball.
But,
I apologize.
But the thing about it is that when you look at it, one thing that we talked about in this meeting was that we did not want to get overheated too much over guys who had great years in rookie ball.
Right.
And the reason for that is that we have a long track record in our minds. When you think about it, there have been a number of guys who come out and have a great, just destroy rookie or short season ball. And, it's the easiest one to destroy.
Right.
I'm
looking at guys who are in our top 100 still, like Gary Sanchez and Martin Perez, are guys who tore up short season ball and rocketed up our prospect list that we probably got a little overheated about.
I think of one. Joe Panik, I think, made it last year, didn't he? Or did he not?
I don't remember.
But Joe Panik, even if he didn't, Joe Panik was a guy who, solid prospect. He destroyed, he moved up a lot. He was already considered a pretty solid prospect. But if you looked at where he ranked at the end of that year compared to where he ranked coming into the draft that year, he had moved up because he hit 400.
Right, he did. He had a tremendous debut in the Northwest League, no doubt.
And you get a little further away from that, look back at it and go, you know what? It was a very good debut. His hit tool ceiling and all probably is a little lower than what it looked like when he was in the Northwest League.
Yeah, I guess so. I think the main thing is that, for me, the reports out of the Northwest League were that Joe Panik might have a chance. Because, he didn't make last year's top 100.
Okay.
I would have been shocked if Joe Panik had made our top 100. Because he was number 67 coming into the year on our draft list. And he got drafted 29th overall. But those are two that's actually not a bad thing to throw out here at the end of the podcast. With our draft guys, we did try, not always, we weren't doctrinaire about it or dogmatic about it, but we did try to, if a guy was ranked higher on our draft list in June, we tried to maintain that order in our top 100. We weren't going to be, again, bowled over by the fact that David Dahl tore up the Pioneer League just because, and count that against, say, Courtney Hawkins, who tore up the Pioneer League or the Appy League for 2 weeks and then got promoted to High A. We don't want to hold that against Courtney Hawkins. The talent is still the talent.
Right. The best way to put it is that what we asked is okay, if this guy was ranked ahead of this guy and we had him ranked differently when the draft was coming out.
We needed a compelling
The question is okay, so why is that? There were guys who we said, there is no, Lucas Giolito is one who, I mean, even though we knew some things going into
tough debate
the top 100, you know, we knew more things going into the top 100 than we did going into the draft. Because in the draft it was, yeah, he's got an elbow problem.
Right, but now he still threw 100 miles an hour before he had this
right,
elbow
now
problem.
Now we know he's having Tommy John. It's a different story.
And Lucas Giolito is at number 67, and he could have ranked a lot higher in our top 100, or he could have not ranked at all, and both would have been defensible. He's a very tough tough prospect to rank. Other thing we wanted to point out is that we really did try to keep – I think we did this throughout. If a guy ranked number one on the top 10, that guy was higher than whoever ranked number two. But there might be some disagreements otherwise on our top 100 lists, and that's fine because we have however many different guys write top 10s. Jim Callis and I definitely have input on all those top 10 and all those top 30 lists. But that doesn't mean, again, that we rule this top 100. And this is not Jim Callis's top 100. It's the Baseball America top 100. So I like our approach. I'm very confident in our approach. We see a lot of these players, but we don't rely on our eyes. Hashtag not a scout. We rely on input from scouts, coaches, minor league managers throughout the minor leagues, gather this information, and then we put them through – you know, six or seven different people in the offices own way that they rank prospects. And it results in this list and in this this compilation. And I like the way it turns out. So it's a fun process. The top 100 has become a better process over the years. I'm very confident and comfortable with our process. And I hope people enjoy it. That's the main thing. I hope people enjoy the work and the prospect talk. And we'll have a lot more of it coming up at baseballamerica.com and with the Google Hangouts and with the chat and all the different ways that we bring our perspective over all these different platforms and new media in 2013. So thanks to all of you for listening, for reading, for following us on Twitter at Baseball America, on our Google Plus page and on our Facebook page. Anything else from you, JJ?
I think it was time to wrap it up.
Let's
and get the top 100 up.
Absolutely. For JJ, I'm John. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.